Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
You've reached the Murder Between Friends podcast with Sherilyn Dale and Gavin Fish. Please stay on the line. This week's episode starts in 3, 2, 1.
Take three, action.
Take three. We've had technology gremlins today.
I love that you said gremlins. I died when I read that, because yeah, it's been a day.
It is.
What time is it right now? So it's 3. We tried to do this 3 hours ago, noon my time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've made three versions.
And just killed it 20 minutes in, and then it just got better from there, didn't it?
I like that outtake, though. Just got better from there. All I'm praying is that some of the footage was salvageable just to laugh about it at the end. And hopefully we'll be able to show everybody.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're not in the same room. We're far away from each other. I think 2 time zones away from each other. I'm in the Eastern time zone. Yep. You're in Mountain, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So.
So it's fun.
Yeah, it is.
We'll get there.
We'll get there.
This
I like
is
your set.
Two.
I like your lamps.
Thank you.
I like your little.
Aren't they fun?
Your little. What are they? Like bobbleheads or what are they? They're cute.
My little. They're called Funko Pops.
A Funko Pop. I am so old, Sherilyn.
I don't know. They like so. I've really done a taboo here because I took them out of the boxes. Like, I think you're supposed to keep them in the boxes, and they're collector items. And I take them out and play with them and set them up and stuff. So
that's a better way to live, anyway.
You can get anything. You can get anything Funko popped. Like anything that you love. If there's a show you love. If there's anything you like out there, there's a Funko Pop for it.
Really?
Yeah.
Could I get my kids Funko popped? Could I, like, do something?
Oh, I'm sure you could.
Oh.
And if they don't offer that, like, they're really missing out. I never even thought about that. You're so sweet.
Oh,
just well, wanting little Funko Pop kids.
That would be fun. That would be fun. Yeah. To have little like, action figure, giant-headed children.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Our kids crack me up.
I'll look into it.
We've got a little boy, our youngest son. We have 2 boys. And he's a little special. Like, he's just really, really sweet, but just kind of wonder what's going on in there sometimes, you know? He's fine. He's just a little bit. And I was telling my big sister about that, and she goes, yeah, I told Mom and Dad that same thing about you. So,
oh, well, then that's great, because he's in great company then.
Hopefully he'll turn out okay. I you know, remains to be seen.
Little mini G money.
Little mini G money. That's funny. Oh, what have you been up to this week since we last spoke with Collier and Tara? That was a ways back. What have you been doing?
Okay, well, because of that call, I've been spending money upgrading my equipment. Because I felt really insecure about everything.
Collier,
so I'm really glad that I sound.
Punches, did he?
No, he didn't. I messaged Tara on, like, when she was like, thanks for having us. I was like, well, thanks for coming on, and hopefully you'll come again. Tell Collier I changed everything.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
So new camera.
Yeah, that was great.
New mic, new interface.
New camera, new mic, new earphones. Like, yeah. We are just killing it out here. I do have to get a little bit more better set up now. We're having wire issues and all that stuff. But anyways, I think at least I sound better. And like you were saying on the first attempt at this, my voice sounds better to a male audience, which is nice.
Yes. Yeah, the mic effect, the proximity effect, being close to a dynamic mic like that, that sounds way, way better. Very good. I hope you use it on your YouTube very channel, good. Too.
Yeah, I'm going to. I really love the sound of it, and I've hunted it down. And this is, I'm always like, what is that sound? And this is the mic that's producing that sound that I like. So I guess I have got like the dude ear that you're saying.
Yeah, you can hear it. You can hear it for sure.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I'm so excited. Yeah, so that's what I've been up to. It's not as exciting as what you've been up to, which is what I really want everybody to know about.
It's been a busy week. But I feel like in take one, I talked too much about kind of the setup. So I don't
see,
know
I disagree, but we are going to go how you want to do it, but I disagreed.
Okay.
I liked the setup.
Well, I'll tell you the story, okay? Unlike many successful YouTuber in my current present company, I'm not a full-time YouTuber. I have to work. So
I got a real job.
It's a good job. I like my job. I've never had a job like this before, but I work for a publication here in Western Pennsylvania. It's called EYT Media. We publish stories. I like write stories on any, like all sorts of things. Like, fire at a house or a community meeting or whatever. But one of the things.
Oh, even community meetings. That's adorable.
Yeah, I was at the commission meeting just a couple of days ago. I wrote an article about what happened at our Venango County Commission. So yeah, it's a blast. And Sherilyn, we moved from Northern California, from a pretty big place to a small place on purpose. Like we wanted small town. So I'm loving it.
That small town feel.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
So one of the things that they brought up when I first got hired is they wanted me to look into a case. They knew that I have a true crime YouTube channel. And Jake, my editor, had seen an article on NBC.com. It was a Dateline article about, like, I think it was the 30th anniversary of the discovery of remains in Clarion County, Pennsylvania. And he wanted me to look into that. And so I did. I started reaching out. This is what happened, okay? 1990, four children are out playing. This is the country. They're out in the middle of nowhere. And they're out playing. The article says they're berry picking, and they may have been doing that too, but they're just kind of out being kids. And they came across a human body, like a dead human body, laying face down in the creek. These kids, the youngest was 7, the oldest was 12.
Ugh.
Can you imagine that?
No, yeah.
I mean, that would be, I mean, we've all seen Stand By Me, right? Or Read the Body, Stephen King. Like that is a...
Yes.
That's a experience that you won't forget, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, the Dateline article was about the 7-year-old girl who now, 32 years later, is 39 years old. It happened the day before her 8th birthday. So every time her birthday would come around, she'd think about finding. And the remains were decomposed. Like they'd been there for a month or two. And it was along like a road that people would travel. I've asked myself this like a whole bunch of times. Why didn't anybody like notice the smell? I mean, she was hidden, but then I thought, out here, dead deer are all over the place. Maybe people smelled decomposition and just like another dead animal. It's out in the middle of the country, right? So.
Right.
Anyway, okay, I don't want to make this story super long, but this is what happened. I started reaching out to this woman, were connected through Facebook and stuff. We weren't friends on Facebook, but we had friends of friends and stuff. So I was reaching out to her, and I was a little impatient. And so I looked at the picture on the Dateline article, and I could see a culvert going underneath, like a tunnel going underneath railroad tracks. And above it were high voltage power lines. And so I drove out to the general area and started following power lines all over the place till I found it. I found the spot. And like, as soon as I found the spot, I got like a ding on my phone, and it was Facebook, and it was Angie saying, you know, responding to my request. So I didn't need to do that, but that's how I found the spot.
I'll take you there.
It's so funny.
It makes me wonder, like, when you were told no as a child, did you accept that easily?
I was never told no as a child.
That's awesome then. Okay, that's cute memories. And look how you turned out. People say I spoil my kids, but
that no. Like,
well, you're just so, you know, you are like, when you are like a dog with a bone, when you are on to something, you're like, I'm not waiting for you. Like, I'm gonna go out and find these power lines.
I don't know that it's personality. I don't think it's a good personality trait most of the time. But when you're talking about investigating things, yeah, I like to jump in. I definitely do. In fact,
I love it.
One of the criticisms that I get on my channel is that I don't do enough videos. Because, like,
what do you, that you don't make enough content?
I don't make enough content, and it's not regular content. Like, you've told me.
You know what? I agree, but I'm selfish. Like, I'm like, let's go. Weekly episode,
well,
Gavin.
Told me, but I, you go be doing so deep. But yeah, yes. I can't.
It's hard though, because you've got so much going on in the back end. And this is prime example. You're out there finding power lines. You're driving hours outside of your, you know, your city or town.
Well, how do you can't get content every week? That is so hard.
Yeah, I'm finding, well, before it's because I used to do different types of content. So a lot of it, I didn't, it was cases that had kind of already been out there. So I would read a book or research everything that I could that was online. If there was court documents, I'd go through all of those, right? And then write my story through that. But now what I'm doing is I'm finding that I'm connecting way more with survivors or surviving family members of a victim. So I get to just talk to them, and they get to tell me their story, and they're pretty much doing my job for me and allowing me to use my platform to help them. So it's changed. And I don't know, I find like it's getting easier, but you work so much with, you know, trying to, you know, like find the mystery, you know, and that takes time. So
no, I remember
that's not a weekly content thing.
It's hard. I want to be able to put more content out more quickly. But but when you like dig deep into something, sometimes it takes 5 or 6 weeks before I even feel like, okay, I've got enough here that I can go after it. You know, the first time,
and have at least like a part one or whatever.
Right. Yeah. And that's the other thing that I get criticized about is that I will have a part one on one story, and then a part one on another story, and then a part one on another story. And before I come back to part two on another, on the first story. Right. And I think that's
fair criticism.
Yeah, but you
got so much on the go.
Yeah.
It's fair, but I also think it's cool because I don't really think anybody out there is doing it.
Well, I've got to find a way to be better, but anyway, okay, getting back to the story. So this is what happened, okay?
Okay.
I meet Angie out there, who is the little girl, and she told me the whole story. Oh, what happened was the police had no leads to go on. She was so badly decomposed that they never knew. They still, to this day, have no idea who this person is. And so I think the first place I went to the, like, the old library in Clarion, PA. It was in a basement. It was literally in a basement full of books of newspapers and like microfilm and stuff.
Is that
like
this,
that.
The photo you sent me?
Yeah. Yeah. I was down like in a dungeon going through microfilm,
mm-hmm.
and I only found a couple stories. Yeah. So that didn't help me any. Then I reached out to the coroner to see if he had the autopsy report. Because in Pennsylvania, they hardly ever do give out those things on an open case, but they can if they want. And I thought, small town, maybe he'd be willing to give it to me. He looked for it, couldn't find it.
Right.
But he gave me a lead. He told me that when he was in coroner school, when you get elected coroner, you have to go to like a school. And one of the professors at his school was a professor of forensic anthropology at Mercyhurst University. And he seemed to remember that forensics anthropologist had done an examination on those very bones. And so he said, why don't you reach out to him and see? And it turned out that he had, when he was at University of Pittsburgh back in the 90s, he had done an examination on those bones to try to figure out any clue that he possibly could figure out to see if they could identify. And Sherilyn, they did the coolest stuff. I mean, it's a little macabre, but they did the coolest stuff. They after the autopsy, which was brief, I still don't have a copy of it, by the way. Everybody's trying to find it for me.
Oh.
But
okay, it's just missing.
Yeah, it's just missing. And in the state of Pennsylvania in the 90s, there wasn't a standardized, like, coroners had to file certain
filing
ways.
System. Yeah, yeah. Right.
So
right.
It just is elsewhere. Nobody knows where it is. So, but anyway, after the autopsy, they handed the body over to this professor. He then went through the process of getting rid of all the flesh and soft tissues, like all the everything, the tendons, the skin, the hair, the everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they put her into like a container with flesh-eating beetles. And the beetles took care of all that.
Oh, right? No, it's just like it's, yeah.
Yeah, and he sent me the report. When I talked to him, he sent me the report. So he detailed the whole thing. It's like a month in this thing of beetles or 2 months in this thing of beetles. And then it goes into like a vat of chemicals that degrease. And at that point,
I never knew this stuff. It's like, it's,
yeah,
I never knew this stuff. And now I'm not ever going to stop thinking about it.
It's actually pretty
cool. Where do they find the beetles? It is cool. Where do they find the beetles?
They must cultivate them, right? They must farm them somehow. I don't know.
Right.
But they have them in the forensics anthropology lab at Pitt at the time. Just put her in with the beetles, I guess, you know?
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, so I reach out to this guy, and he's like, yeah, I think I still am curating those bones. What? Like,
wow.
Like, she hasn't been identified, so they can't inter her. Right? That they she's evidence. But the coroner doesn't have like an evidence locker. The medical examiner wouldn't have either. The police wouldn't keep bones. And so he has kept her literally in a cardboard box since 1990.
Oh, my gosh.
And he goes, so he sent me his report, and he goes, yeah, I've got her. One of my grad students found her. You want to check her out? And I went, yeah. So I full on went up there, and he had her laid out on a long classroom table from her skull down to her feet. And you could see, like, it's on the right side of her head. She was a murder victim. She was killed by blunt force trauma. They've never figured out who she is.
And you saw it.
I handled it. I held her. Yeah, held her skull and her bones. And
saw the fracture in her skull.
Yeah.
My gosh.
Looking around in my office, like, I have a fragment of her femur here. Hang on a second.
Okay. Just have a fragment of the femur.
Gremlins.
More gremlin activity.
I know, man. Long story, not any shorter. So I'm up there with Dr. Dirkmott. We're handling these bones. Look at this.
That's just crazy.
Yeah.
That you have this. So, that you got your hands on this.
Yeah. So I asked, have they done DNA? And he goes, yeah, back in 91, they uploaded her to CODIS. And then again in 2012. But I learned a little bit about CODIS. CODIS is a term that we just kind of throw around in true crime, right? Everybody, is it uploaded to CODIS?
Yep. Right.
CODIS has problems. I don't know if you're familiar with the way it is, but CODIS is a DNA database. It's managed by the FBI. I actually think it's at a university, but the oversight is done by the FBI. And it is a database of DNA that is like one-to-one matching. So if you upload to CODIS, if somebody else has uploaded DNA from that same person and it matches, then we know that this unidentified person matches to this identified person. And it's a
right,
good system.
But it has to be that person's DNA, correct, right? Like it couldn't be the family.
Correct.
A family member. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the idea was, okay, so we're collecting this DNA. Let's see if anybody who's been convicted of a crime before might match to other crimes. And I think that's
right.
Like that was a good start in the DNA game. But with missing persons people, that mean what would have to happen is your loved one would have to go missing. You would report it to the authorities, and then they would have to say, well, do you have a DNA sample of your son or daughter, or wife, husband, girlfriend, whatever, right? And you'd say, sure, here's their toothbrush or their comb or whatever. And then they would extract the DNA from that sample, test it for, it's a specific DNA test called, I think it's called single tandem repeats or simple tandem repeats. I can't remember. Single tandem repeats is what comes to mind. And then they only take like 13 to 20 spots in your entire genome, get the value and upload it. And then, so if I had a daughter that went missing, I gave my toothbrush to the authorities, they could do that. And then I don't want to think about things like this, but then if something happened to her and there was an unidentified body somewhere, they could match them up. That's how that works.
Right. Okay.
So it's like finding a needle in a haystack. It's good to do, but it's not the best way. So anyway, I asked Dr. Bickmott if we could do genetic genealogy. It's a different kind of test. So in those kinds of tests,
my aunt is getting into this.
Really? She might be able to help me.
Yes.
Because
I think she could. That when you sent me the thing, she was immediately who came to mind. This is what
she does that
wanting
type of
to
research?
Do. She's pretty good at it. She does, yes. So I don't know where she is in terms of like the DNA aspect of it. I know that she was like trying to like she's learning it now, but she she's just a genealogy genius. She can find everybody's full like list of their family members from who knows where.
That's cool.
So then now she's wanting to get into like the forensic side of it.
So, yeah, I might want to talk to your aunt about that.
Okay.
Because this is what happens. When I asked Dr. Dirkmott if I could have a sample of the DNA, he goes, no. You are a civilian. There are protocols, right? The coroner can, though. So I called over to the coroner. I said, hey, can you request a sample of her bones? And we'll do DNA. He goes, yeah. So he goes and he makes the request and he gets this sample, right? And then because we live in a small town, I went over and I picked it up from him. Because
wild.
I have several friends that are geneticists and they work at different universities and different labs around the area. So I started making calls, asking if I could use their expertise, because I don't know what I'm doing, right? I have no idea.
Right.
How does one extract DNA? I don't even really have a grasp of understanding what DNA is. I just know that it's there.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
So an unnamed friend invited me to their lab where we then took the bone. I'm going to hold this up here. Do you see all those holes in it?
Yes.
Yeah. So we took a drill and drilled all those holes to make bone dust. Pulverized it up. And then we started the process of extracting DNA from that bone dust. And guess what?
What?
There is DNA in that bone dust. We got it.
There is?
Yeah. Yeah, we got it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it was like,
and how long did that process take? Yeah. How long does that process take to find out?
So they had me do the work, right? I was like, had a drill, you know, and putting in the little test tubes. And then they have a couple of chemicals that go in there. One of them is like a primer is what they called it. The other one is some sort of enzyme. I don't know. I have no idea. But once we got them into these little tubes, we put them in a heating block, and the heat is what activates whatever chemicals we went in there that extracts the DNA. It's a really cool process, but that whole, it was on the heating block for 48 hours.
Oh, and, okay.
Yeah, Sherilyn, this is the coolest thing. And like, they then have, after 48 hours, they have this solution full of like bone dust, right?
Okay.
So they literally pour it through this sieve that is chemically treated to let all the stuff go through except DNA. DNA sticks to the sieve. Everything else goes through. And then you take that sieve and you put it into another chemical, which releases it from that sieve into another solution.
Oh my God. Like, if science class was like this, I would have done a lot better than I did.
It was so cool. It was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
But then they have to amplify it. Okay. Which, there's just so much. You know how, do you ever hear like police officers or experts on shows say, you know, DNA technology has changed so much over time. Maybe we can do something now that we couldn't do before. You ever heard that kind of stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
It's bull crap. There's very little that has changed. Very little.
Okay.
Like, I was asking my friend, and they said, the process of amplifying DNA has not changed since 1985.
Oh, my gosh. Like, so what? It's just like the databases have changed then?
So it's the understanding.
Or nothing, and they just want to sound fancy.
Once you extract the DNA and amplify the DNA, which means you're making copies of it. Once you get to past that point, then there have been a lot of changes.
Okay.
Because it's actually pretty complex the way that they read the DNA. Like, I was talking to my buddy about how they amplify. The amplification is the word they use. It just means copying the DNA. So how does that even work, right? How do you copy DNA? And they literally do it the same way the body does. They just, like, they take the DNA strand, that helical strand, and they heat it up to 90 degrees C, and that splits the two strands apart. Like, it breaks the bonds that make those strands stick together.
Okay. And
Then they put an enzyme in the solution. I can't remember what it's called, but anyway, it then, like, reads each side of that DNA and copies the other side that would match and sticks it back together. Now you have two pieces.
Okay.
And then they do that cycle over and over and over and over and over again until you have millions of copies.
Wow. And
they've been able to do that since 1985.
Wild.
Yeah. So cool. So anyway,
it is cool.
Now we're in the process of what's called chipping, where the DNA strands that we've amplified have to be cut up into like little pieces. And then there's like this, a chip, they call it a chip, but it's like a like a microscope slide. Like, you know how Dexter put his blood between the two slides, those glass pieces?
I don't know
if you ever watched Dexter. They're like that.
Yeah.
but
okay,
microscopically, they've got like a million little holes in them, each hole filled okay. with a certain compound that sticks to a certain segment of the DNA, and it sucks it in and bonds to it. And then they like dye it. And so all that stuff is new. And that's the process that we're going through now. But the, like, we literally okay. have a good chance.
Have you gotten there yet?
No, that's going to take a couple weeks.
Okay.
But it's happening.
Okay.
It's in the process. It's going.
How cool is that though? Like you could be weeks, you know, couple months away from figuring this out, solving this.
Like, I think we have a 50-50 shot of solving the mystery. Maybe better.
100%.
Yeah.
I think better because Penny Doe's got you on her side.
Yeah, I'm a dog with a bone, right? I'm not going to let it go.
Yep. You're not going to let it go. No. Yeah.
So that's
I'm so excited. That is so cool. And so we have to wait a couple weeks. So then we'll check in with that. And then what's on the agenda this week? I know it's hectic for you, right?
Yeah, I've got a couple things going. I've got a case that nobody knows or cares about right now. Let me show this to you. You see this?
Yes.
I went up to Countersport, PA to meet with a family, and their son was murdered 17 years ago, and it's mm-hmm. a very, well, it's not similar to Penny Doe, but it's similar in that he was missing for a long time. His body was badly decomposed when they found it. So they haven't been able to solve the mystery of who killed him. But it's a small town that they're from. Well, it's a small town he was living in. It didn't happen in Countersport, but it's a small town he was living in. And I think, like, I'm starting to get leads. I've gone through all of the documentation. I've organized it the way I usually organize everything. And then I wrote an article in my publication and asking for leads, and they're coming in. Like, it's a small town.
Wow.
People like gossip, right? So I'm getting those leads.
Yes.
Been talking with Pennsylvania State Police and stuff to give them that stuff. And yeah, it's just a lot going on.
That is so cool, though. It makes everything that I do feel not as cool.
No, your stuff's cool. Your stuff's cool. I think the whole letting people tell their story, like having them send in their story to you and you sharing that on your channel is very cool. Very few people have a voice.
Yes. Yes. And that's what I'm finding. So I'm excited about that series, that it's doing quite well. I mean, like, for being something new, like we were talking about, people don't always love to jump on new things, right? Like, so when you test something out and it sticks on YouTube, it's actually really, it feels really good. And I love that it's that other people are supporting, you know, members of the Sippendales, you know, like of everybody sending in their stuff, and they're able to, I don't know, feel heard. And then when I read a story, I sometimes get an email back being like, hearing, you know, writing it out was therapeutic and very healing, but hearing it and then seeing the response and just having that validated, was like, they just didn't even know that they could get that type of healing, you know, and comfort from strangers who love them and believe them and support them. So I don't know, it feels really good. It's just hard to do. And I wish I could read more of them, but I have to limit it to, I take one day to put as many stories as I can together. I try to like get like 4 or 5 scripts done. But by the end of that day, I'm very sensitive, I guess.
Yeah, you get drained.
It's tough.
No, that's something that...
And you're emotional and... It's tough.
I hope it's something that we don't lose, though, because it could be really easy to just get desensitized to what are really just really horrific things that have happened to all sorts of different people from all sorts of different backgrounds. And if you lose
that. Exactly.
I don't know.
Oh, then I guess we got, I don't either. And it's hard to do that when you're actually speaking to these, you know, like, or you're getting somebody's firsthand account of what happened to them, you know, it's so different than just hearing somebody else tell somebody else's story from Dateline, you know, like where we were never there. We weren't in the room. We didn't get to be a part of that interview. But I think it's, I don't know. And then that heightens also when we do things like go out and meet the Elmquists, you know, and stay in their home. And
man, that was an experience, you know, wasn't it? That was awesome.
I can't wait to go back. Yeah, it really was.
We should describe how that went. That was a fun weekend. Like, my wife got a big kick out of it because while we were there, I stayed out in the camper. And
yes,
I don't camp. Like, I do not camp. And so she was kind of making fun of me, right? But that was the nicest camper ever. It was nice, man.
Oh, yeah. And Scott, that's Scott's baby. I mean, if you're staying in the camper, you're someone special.
That was really cool. We've shared, I think, a little bit on each of our channels what that was. But, I mean, that was something that was really special. They invited us to come out to their home and meet with them in person and go around and see the different places that are meaningful to their family and to David and that whole case.
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. It's really indescribable. And, I know that you felt the same way too, but it was like, you got there prior to me, you got there a couple hours before. So you got to spend time with them a little bit before I got the off. So, I don't know what that initial meet was for you, but for me, it was like when you guys picked us up at the airport, I like ran over, gave you a hug, gave Scott a hug. It was like, I had already known you all my whole life. It was not hard to get along and just click.
Yeah.
All of us.
We Scott and I, before you got there, I think I was just there like an hour or two before you. We went and grabbed lunch at a place that he worked at as a teenager. It was kind of fun.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we went to like a Chinese restaurant that he knew. It had become a chain throughout the Midwest, but the first store, he remembered the founder, loved her, worked for her from time he was like 16 years old. It was really cool. So,
oh my gosh,
that was fun to have.
I love that.
Like, kind of get to know him, like sitting in one of the. It was like sitting in a, I don't know, like a Panda Express or something. It was like a chain, little Chinese place.
But okay.
It was the first one, and it was the one that he worked at, and it was pretty cool.
I can just picture it.
Yeah, we went to the apartment complex that.
Yeah, you went before me.
Mm-hmm. But we didn't go in. We waited on that. But there was this moment in the car where Scott was like, I think we were driving from the apartment complex to Athelbus, the Bible College campus. And he was talking about how, like, we were on this road and he goes, you know, my very first date with my wife, we were driving on this road. And he told me this whole story of his first date with his wife. And then he goes, little did I know that 30 years later, within a mile of where I first met my wife, my son would be dead, engulfed in flames. It was just...
Yeah, that's rough.
It was a moment.
Yeah, man. When you told me that was really, really rough. And it's those moments it's those moments exactly that keep us from getting desensitized. How do you, you know, how?
Yeah, well, I think
when you're out there learning these things.
I think people do.
They do, yeah.
We've got to be careful about that. I sometimes, like, the cases that that speak to me are more the ones that nobody really know. It's not that they don't know about it. It's that they're not popular, I guess. I think with the exception, I covered Gabby Petito a lot. I felt like that was important to do at the time. Looking back on it, I don't think that I really contributed I think I was more of a succubus on that whole thing more than a contributor. Like I've had to.
I don't
try to be a little better.
I don't agree. I do think. Yeah, I think we've had this conversation. I do definitely think that the Gabby Petito. I don't know. It was odd for me. That was a turning point for me where it was something that I did not want to cover because we didn't know. But there are people who were able to do that ethically. And I do feel like you were one of them. I don't think that you were out there just hurling accusations. And, you know, you had very valid questions, points to point out. But there were people in the community that did not.
Well, I did a couple things where I spread information that was already disproven, you know, I was like, but that, well, what I learned from that is that I just don't want to do that anymore because I don't want to be wrong. I don't want to be putting stuff out there that's going to lead people in the wrong direction. And
right.
I got a, man, I'm having a hard time with names right now. What was the name of the girl who disappeared recently from the Lake Tahoe area and her body was found in the river?
Ooh. Kelly?
Kylie.
Oh my God, I'm also going.
It was Kylie.
Kylie?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, so I didn't get into the case, but I got several of those really angry messages, comments, and emails because I wasn't covering it, but I didn't want to be.
Oh.
I didn't want to make the same mistakes that I had made on Gabby Petito and didn't feel like I could contribute.
Surprising.
Like I didn't feel like I'm not on the ground. Like if I lived back in California where I grew up, that was an hour away from my house. So I could have gone out. I could have searched. I could have helped. But
it would have been different. Yeah. You could have had that type of content where you're like, okay, we're out here right now. Yeah. Well, apologies, everybody who's watching, that my quality has probably just shit the bed for you. But this is what we're left with right now. We will get better. I will get better equipped next time. I really would like to know what I want to know why, I didn't get any of those angry emails about not covering it. So was it because a lot of those people who had come to your channel was used to that from the Gabby Petito?
Yeah,
okay, that makes sense.
And I think that's one of the reasons why, like, my channel has like 40,000 subs, and I think like 30 of them or 35,000 of them really want to see that kind of content that I did during the Gabby Petito thing. And I just don't want to do it anymore because I want to be helpful, and I just don't think that I was. So I'm not going to.
I love that, though, Gavin. I mean, and I think that's so cool. Yeah. And I don't know. Like, and yeah, obviously it sucks because it's almost kind of like restarting, right? Like you're regrowing your channel to find, but you're finding your people. You know, when I cover something and people fall off or they have a rude comment to say, I'm like, hey, go. Like, make room for the others.
Yeah, I feel the same way that you just. I kind of have to be true to who I am and not kind of, I have to be true to who I am. So I'm just going to keep trying to find. Now, there is a case right now that I'm interested in that everybody knows about, though. You and I have talked about this a little bit.
Okay.
The Jahlia Davis case.
Ah, yes.
I'm really interested in that one. And
I am as well.
Let me tell you. Okay. Jahlia Davis's mom. If you guys don't know this case, I guess look it up. We don't need to tell you the entire thing, but she died in a horrific manner in a way that her family thinks was a murder, but the authorities chalked up to drunk driving, like an accident because of drunk driving.
And they believe she was the driver, right?
So the authorities say that she was the driver, but one of the prevailing theories is that she was not. But it's very difficult to tell. But this is the reason I want to get into this case. Jahlia's mom, Kim, has put up on Facebook a lot. She has a group called Justice for Jahlia. It has like 50,000 followers.
Yeah, I'm in there.
Yeah. And she's put up like 300 or 400 pages of pictures of documentation that she got from the police, and she's put up a lot of pictures of the car. She has other pictures of the crime scene that she's kind of limitedly put up there because she doesn't obviously want pictures of her daughter out there, right?
But, understandable, of course, yes.
I looked up West Virginia's public records law, and it's a good law. It's like, I think all public records should be public after a certain amount of time. But in West Virginia, if a case is considered closed, it's public. So I made a request, and I'm getting it all. So
wow.
I think it's around 700 pages.
Yeah, that's what you were saying, like a lot.
Yeah, 200 images. What I won't be getting is the autopsy or autopsy photos, which I'm perfectly fine with because those should remain private. Those are not, you know, that would be horrible if somebody without any kind of ethical, you know, I guess, mm-hmm. any kind of ethics would just get those and publish them out there. That would be horrible, right? So,
I can't even imagine.
Other than the autopsy, I'm getting everything.
Holy cow.
So I'm gonna dig into that one a bit, I think.
I can't wait. Yeah, you and I spoke about that a bit because we're both really interested in it. You've been speaking to her mom as well, too, which is great. I don't know. There's something about that you and I both really like doing. I know like some don't, and I never used to as much. Like I don't know if I kind of felt like, okay, I do want to cover this case and bring attention to the victim and do all that stuff, but then I didn't want to upset a family member. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I didn't want to be like, hey, are you open to talking, if they weren't. And I don't know, I guess I've kind of learned different ways of kind of approaching the situation. And I think that for the most part, everybody, like when you do reach out, like they are very understanding and usually want you to talk about it. So I think that's where we've done quite a shift in our channels, which I love so much. But yeah, when you told me you were talking to her mom, I thought that was really special and cool.
Texting back and forth through like Facebook Messenger. We've never actually spoken on the phone. Right. She's pretty guarded.
Spoken on the phone, yeah. She's guarded, yeah.
I think she feels a little burned by the whole mile marker 181 thing.
Right.
But yeah, I want to go into that case with an open mind. Right. Like there's weird stuff in that case where I'm like, I can understand why a family would feel the way they do. But I also talked with, do you know who, what's Mac's last name? Mac McCollum. Do you know Mac McCollum? She's a CSI from Georgia. She's pretty awesome. I was talking to her a long time ago, and on another case, and she described how I was wrong about my, like, I guess my, the things that I, the, what it, my theories were, like, I was going into it going, it can't possibly be the way the investigator said it. And she went, well, no, I mean, I can think of half a dozen cases off the top of my head where it was that way, right? So, I want to go into it with an open mind and see if I come to the same conclusion as the family or not. We'll see.
And you're great at that. And I also think that you do it very respectfully, which is another reason why I wanted to partner with you, because we're very different in that. I bring like a lot of like emotion and theories and then I run with them, and you're like, okay, come on back, Sherilyn. We got to reassess that theory.
Yeah.
You're too emotional right now.
I don't think I've ever said that one time, Sherilyn, but we do come at things differently.
But you, sure. You keep me more focused and on track, because I can get right in there, right? Like, and I get like all fired up and I'll suspect something and I'll try to go with it. And you're like, yeah, it could be. You're very gentle about it. I love that. You're never like, I've lost you, girl, you're gone.
Wouldn't it be fun to have actual like investigative training? Like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah. But you're really good at it.
Did I tell you about when I was taken up into the evidence room in the courthouse out in Clearfield, PA? Did I tell you about this?
Yeah, you sent me photos, I think. Oh, I didn't know the story.
I was looking at a case from my hometown from 1972 where it was tried and the man was found not guilty. And I was comfortable kind of going after it because he's long since passed away. He died in the 80s. So I didn't mind like kind of looking into it. I ultimately came to the conclusion that he was guilty. He just had really good lawyers. So, yeah. He killed her. I feel very confident. But
okay,
the police didn't read him his Miranda rights. They messed up all sorts of things.
Oh my good lawyers. Gosh.
But anyway, so I go to this courthouse that's in Clearfield, PA. It's a couple hours away, and I'm asking the prothonotary is the title of the record keeper out here. And she's like, no, we don't have it down here. Maybe you should go check with Chip. He could check the attic for you. Okay, so I go up to the...
Of course his name's Chip.
Of course his name is Chip, right? So I go to his office. I wait around for a while. He's like walking around the courthouse somewhere. And these are all like pre-Civil War like buildings, you know? They're all built in the early 1800s and stuff. And he comes and I tell him the case that I'm looking at. He's like, well, it was a murder case, so we would have all those exhibits. We don't throw them away. I went, really? No, we don't throw them away. Come with me. And he takes me to like this bookcase where I couldn't see the door. It wasn't like a hidden door in the bookcase. That would have been cool. But there was like this hidden door that I couldn't see that went up this narrow passageway. Like my shoulders touched the walls going up into like the bell tower of this old courthouse. And up there, they have kept all the evidence from every murder trial they've had since 18 whatever.
Oh my gosh. In a couple of rooms up there.
Right? He wouldn't let me take pictures. They let me take pictures in the basement, but he wouldn't let me take pictures up there. Sherilyn, there was like, I can't remember, you know those, like in cowboy movies, the rifles where they cock them, they go, ch-ch, they're like Remington repeaters or I don't know what they are.
I'm not a gun guy either.
Guns, but
no.
There was a gun leaned up against the wall in that room, just on the floor, leaned up against the gun with a tag on it. And I go and I look at the tag and it said 1859. That was the weapon that murdered somebody in 1859. And it was just gathering dust in this old
room. I could spend days there.
It was the coolest thing. It was the coolest
thing. I got to come down and visit there. That is neat.
Yeah. And that guy just let me in. He just let me in. It's the coolest thing.
He just let me in.
Yeah. We ended up not finding it.
Did you have your media pass, though? Oh, you didn't?
I don't think I was wearing my media pass. I think I just went in there and was like,
I was wondering if that's how you get in.
The media pass takes me far. It does take you far. I did that in Minnesota.
Where were we?
We were at
the police station. Oh, it was at the
Plymouth.
It was at the police Minnesota. Station. I don't think anybody knows that. That photo of us, that one of my favorites. I think my absolute favorite is of us in Camp David that
I like that
my mom took of us. It's my favorite. But the one that everyone loves where, you know, my dress is kind of blowing out and we've got this like mischievous look on our face. We waltzed right. It was Hennepin County off.
It was the police station,
right?
Plymouth Police.
Yeah. Oh, Plymouth.
Yeah.
Plymouth Police Station. And we waltzed right in there. I was sweating. Gavin, you are very confident about that. So I'm just kind of like, I'll just kind of like linger here. And you just are like, The receptionist like, "Hey, how can I help you?" You're like, "Yeah, we're here to hopefully talk about talk to Heath Byrd."
Oh yeah,
and she's like, "What Byrd is this pertaining to?"
Yeah.
Yeah, and you go, I don't think we said we were, well, I don't want to say here what we're saying to some people that we were doing because we haven't announced that in any ways, but I don't think you said that anyway, so it doesn't matter. I think you said that we are looking into a case and we're trying to find some information. And she said, okay, let me see if he's here. She, you know, click-clacked. I always wondered if he was there, but anyways, she said that he wasn't. And then you said, okay, she asked if we wanted to leave a message. You said yes. So she gave us the little paper. And then as she was handing it, she said, what case is this pertaining to? And you're like, David Elmquist. And she knew.
Yeah.
There was no question.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
She just shot that paper across and was like, oh, okay. And we filled out our names and our numbers. And I'm still waiting for a call back.
I have not received a call back from that visit, nor the many phone calls that I've made after the fact. Not a single one.
And, like, I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I guess people don't have to return phone calls, but it's like, they don't know. I feel like if you're...
I have found that if you can drop a name, you get a way further into the whole thing. Like, for example, I was working on this case last year. It's the Amanda Winkowski case. I've probably done more videos on Amanda Winkowski than any other case. It's one that I really care about. Buffalo, New York.
Yes.
And I became in contact. I got in contact with a tiny town police chief who on that case was like a sergeant or something when Amanda Winkowski went missing. He was now the chief of police in that little town. I had been trying to talk to Buffalo PD for months. So I was in there talking to that the chief of police, and I told him something that I found out, and he goes, you really should call, I think her name was Mary something. She was the detective assigned to the case. Mary, I can't remember. But anyway, you should call her and tell her that. And I said, I've tried calling her a million times. And he goes, just drop my name on the voicemail. So I called. I called and I went, hey, Mary, my name's Gavin Fish. I'm a YouTuber. I'm looking into the Amanda Winkowski case. So-and-so, Chief So-and-so told me when I told him this that I should call you and let you know. So here's my number. Gave her my number. And then I got a call back about 20 minutes later. Like, I'd been trying to call her.
Oh, my gosh. Months.
So now I
20 minutes.
Now I just do that. I just do that. I like look up the like personnel in surrounding areas. And when I call the police, yep. I'll say, hey, Detective Jones in Timbuktu told me that I should give you a call. So give me a call back. And then they will call me back.
And you've never talked to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
That's
that was juicy, Gavin.
Otherwise they'd never call back.
Well, then we've got to try to do that with freaking Heath over there.
Yeah, I think we kind of spilled the beans too much with Mr. Byrd, Detective Byrd.
I was going to say, I think we did too.
That was...
Oh, man. Oh,
but yeah.
Good times.
Good times. And there's more to come. Hey, you were just out in
Minnesota. I was going to say, there's some more to come.
You were just
out
there.
It wasn't the same. I was. It wasn't the same without you.
I saw the videos, though.
And I was going to, I know, I was going to FaceTime, and then I never didn't even think about it because I was like, oh, okay, well, I got to go live. And then as I was leaving, well, we had to leave early. We had to leave the dang thing so early, right as Scott was getting Scott, you know, like, Scott is Scott. He's so passionate, and he was spitting out facts. And I was like, I got to go. They canceled my flight. That was later. And then the only one that day was like an hour and a half earlier, and then the next one would have been, we would have got home at midnight the next day, so it wasn't even like doable. Yeah, it really was unfortunate, but we'll be back out there.
Those guys are doing good work, though. They're not going to give up.
They are not going to give up. And I mean, I don't think we can talk about what Amy just texted us anyways, but it's so nice to get those updates. And because of, you know, the support from like our channels and everybody who watches and signs the petition and shows up at those rallies, something really huge is happening for the family. Somebody is wanting to help them and this is huge for them. This is exactly what they've needed, having somebody alongside of them. So that was really nice to hear this week.
They've done good work, man. I admire the crap out of people like Amy and Scott and, you know, the Ellen Greenberg case, Josh and Sandy Greenberg.
Mm-hmm.
I asked them one time, you know, what keeps you going? It's been 11 and a half years. They've been working just trying to get justice. They're not even working on the justice part of it. They just want the world to know officially that their daughter didn't kill herself. 11 and a half years they've been working on that. And I was like, you know, what keeps you going? And he was just like, well, how do I say this? I'm a jerk. I don't care what people think. I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah.
Do it.
You have to be. I mean, and then I guess what's the alternative, right? But that is, I think the more people are aware of that, of like how much legwork you do have to do as a family member. It's unfortunate, but it's the reality. And look at, Stephanie Harlow posted something, last week when, there was finally a person arrested in the Delphi murders. And I shared it because I thought, wow, she said this so well. She said, you know, she was thinking of the family. And then she also said, I'm thinking of all of the other family members out there who don't have this justice yet. Like, do not stop. Don't give up.
Yeah.
And you can't, right? Like, and it is hard. It's unfortunate, but it is, that's how you get the attention. You just can't give up until you've got the answers that you need, because if you stop, who's going to keep going?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I wonder about, I was thinking about that case in particular, I wonder how it came about, how they got that arrest. And I don't want to know now if it would ruin the case, right?
No.
I know that a lot of people want that probable cause affidavit. I think it should stay private for as long as it needs to be. I'm normally an open records guy, right? But
I know,
But if the judge is like, seal this thing, to protect the case, I'm all about just sealing it. I think that's a good idea for now. I don't want it to be sealed forever, but to protect
forever.
The case.
No, I agreed. But, and because it's so early, right?
Yeah, it's really early. But I wonder, like, I remember back in the, let me go back to Ellen Greenberg, for example. Okay. There was like a major seismic shift in the Ellen Greenberg case when it was referred back out of the Attorney General's office and then ultimately out to Chester County. And that case had been languishing for 4.5 years in the Attorney General's office before it was kicked out. The thing that is going to piss me off, if this happens, I hope this doesn't happen, is if Chester County goes, yeah, we see that this is a homicide for sure. If freaking Josh Shapiro stands up there at the conviction or arrest or whatever of whoever killed Ellen Greenberg and says, I'm so proud of our district attorney in Chester County, I will go ballistic. I will be so pissed off because it was his office that held it. And they're all politicians, man. So I'm just I'm curious what's happening there in Delphi or Delphi. Yeah. How do they pronounce it? Delphi? Delphi?
I don't know. I say Delphi, but I think you're right. I think it's Delphi.
Delphi. Anyway,
I don't know.
I wonder if it has been the pressure from the family that's gotten it done, or if it has been on the inside. There have been detectives that have been keeping the pressure on.
Right.
Because they're all those detectives that are awesome that will just never give up. but.
And that's, yeah. And yeah, there is. And it's like, oh, you wish, I wish detectives would be able to just kind of like move, you know, like be fluid, yeah. Because so many cases need those types of detectives. And the reality of the situation, I never knew until I started doing YouTube and going into cases and talking with family members and seeing the injustice and how political it can be and how there are a lot of professionals out there who don't give a crap and drop the ball. And then a family, like this is a real family and a real victim, is left without justice because, I don't know, you don't, yeah. You're not as passionate about your job as you once were. It sucks. I'm very interested though. Like I'm mind blown about who it ended up being. It was somebody who was never on the radar. He worked at the CVS, and I don't know if this was just on, you know, like speculation on the internet or if this is actually factual, that he would have been there to develop photos when the family was trying to put out attention to the case. Yeah. Oh. So like, I don't know if that the family has ever confirmed that. But yeah, he worked at the CVS, and it was, again, one of those cases where everybody who knows him is like, had no idea.
Did you see all the charges against him, though? Like, so much
child
pornography and stuff like that. Yeah, so they're throwing the book at him. He's got so many counts against him. He's got so many counts against him, not just the two murder.
Are they going for the death penalty? Is that an option or no?
I don't know if that's an option there. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, that's one of those things. Like I've talked to other podcasters about the death penalty. I have my thoughts on it. I'm a little more middle of the road on that. But there are some crimes that there just isn't a punishment big enough. And so, yeah,
agreed. This would be one of them.
For sure.
This literally would be one of them. You know, like that's why I call it Jurassic Jail on my channel. So what I want to do is make a Jurassic Park, but it's jail, and it's for like the worst of the worst.
They're just on
and you
an
know
island.
The opening scene. Yeah, they're on an island with dinosaurs. Hey, and somebody sent me this the other day, which I died about. There's like a mosquito thing, literally like on Jurassic Park, where they're like, we might be able to make dinosaurs again. And I'm like, Jurassic Jail's coming. So we ship them out there.
Yeah.
And then you know the opening scene of Jurassic Park where the lamb goes in and then the Tyrannosaurus, you know, he just eats them.
Yeah.
That's where those guys are getting hoisted. And then we just let the dinosaurs do their thing.
Listen, there's a case very similar to the Delphi case, similar-ish, that happened here where I live. Let's see. They just had the 30th anniversary of that, so it was 92.
Oh, is this the one you were telling me about how trick-or-trunk?
Yeah, trick-or-treat was canceled. Yeah, it was the Shauna Howe case.
Okay.
Shauna Howe was an 11-year-old Girl Scout who was walking home from a little Girl Scout Halloween party, the like three blocks it took to go home in a safe town, right? A little town called Oil City, PA. And she was abducted. Like they, witnesses saw her being abducted and, taken into a car by a total of three men. The reason that I bring this up is the third man, the one who actually grabbed her, died in prison like a week ago at the age of 63. And I think, they said natural causes. Oh. I think it was cancer, but apparently he did not have a good experience in prison, being a,
that's unfortunate,
being a child, somebody who perpetrated horrible crimes against a child anyway, but this,
oh yeah,
case,
they're not taken too kindly.
No, they don't like him there.
Oh no.
But this case languished for 12 years. I'm getting back around to what you were just saying. This is a long story. This case languished for 12 years because the two suspects that police had who like fit the description, they were in jail when she was taken. That's what police thought. But 12 years later, a detective who I've become pretty good friends with at the end of his career started doing cold cases, and he was the first person to check the paperwork, and he found out they had been released a couple hours before. So it ended up that it was them. Yeah. Anyway, They did to Shauna Howe. It was a similar thing. They took her, they abused her, and then they took her out to a river and threw her off a bridge. Alive.
Ugh.
Like she, yeah. So One of the three is now dead because there's no death penalty in the state of Pennsylvania. The other two remain. I think they got two life sentences each, something like that.
Okay, so they're not getting out.
No. They were convicted of five things, but...
Okay.
Yeah, I'm hoping this guy... can't remember his name right now. I don't have it in front of me, but I hope that if there is no death penalty, I hope he finds Jurassic Prison. That's... if he's guilty. If he's guilty.
Yeah, if you're... well, and then, yeah, see, like, that's... that's also the thing. Yeah, Jurassic Jail is only available for, like, we know.
It's
like
confirmed.
This is.
No
it's
question
confirmed.
About it.
There's no speculation. No question about it. Like your dude from the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so you just have random tyrannosaurs roaming the island and a place where you can drop in people. And they can run, by the way, right? They can't get off the island, but they can run? Or are they chained and just...
oh. No, well, yeah, no, they were never going to be chained. They were just going to be hoisted down like the lamb. But I kind of like the... that's a little psychotic of me. But I'm like, oh, I like the running aspect of it. Hey, dude, if you can escape the T-Rex who hasn't eaten, go for it.
And survive on this island. Yeah.
Yeah, you're still going to... you're not going to get off the island.
And there
it's,
are other,
it's impossible.
There are other dinosaurs, right? So they have to contend with all the other dangers, too. This is land of the lost.
Oh, yeah. We'll have some velociraptors.
Yeah.
Whatever the dude with the mosquito is willing to, like, share with us, I'm accepting.
Hey, listen. So... I told you I've got a lot of friends that are geneticists, right? I've got one who he's a professor of genetics and genomics, and he's an entomologist. He's all about bugs. So,
I think you were telling me about him.
Oh, he's awesome. His name's Matt. He's amazing. He told me that somebody that he knows within the genetics, whatever you would call that industry, right? From an old piece of DNA from, I think it was hair, he mapped the entire genome of a woolly mammoth who have only been extinct for like 10,000 years and believes that
what?
He could bring it back by incubating. Like he thinks that he can create an embryo and implant an embryo in a pachyderm and in an elephant.
What?
And bring back.
Oh, it's happening.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Could be.
This is awesome.
I know.
You put it out there.
Yeah.
You put it out there and it manifests and comes. Jurassic Jail.
What's his name who wrote Jurassic
is
Park?
The future.
What was his name? I'm blanking. Man, I'm having a hard time with names right
Wasn't
now.
Wasn't it Steven Spielberg?
Well, he directed the movie, but it was based on a book. It was... Who wrote Jurassic Park?
I guess I should know these things.
It's his name. Michael Crichton. Yeah. So, like, maybe Michael Crichton
okay.
is a prophet. Like, he saw this coming.
Yeah. It's like The Simpsons.
Like The Simpsons?
Yeah, The Simpsons. You don't know The Simpsons? The Simpsons?
Well, I know what The Simpsons is.
Theories?
But what's the theory?
They've predicted like so much stuff in their episodes, like years before it happens. So like the first one that's coming to my mind right now was like, I think it was an episode in like the 90s. They had Trump as president going down the escalator.
No.
In the one shot of him, like, yes, Gavin. This is, it's wild.
I live in a hole.
They did, I'm pretty sure it was coronavirus. They also predicted.
Holy cow. Did they predict where it was from? Oh, so
much stuff.
Did it come from like a lab in China or was it?
Yeah, it's something weird. You got to Google this when we're done. It's wild.
I do. I have
There's so much. There's so much that they did. Like, those are just two that are coming to the pot.
Oh, my goodness.
And then there was one, like, after the whole coronavirus thing happened. Remember when, the next thing, while we were still in the midst of it, was, like, the killer wasps or whatever? Like, yes. The big, giant, like,
yeah,
whatever, killer hornets? Yeah, I think they did something like that. And then people were like, hey, stop. Like, it's got to get canceled.
Yeah. No more Simpsons prophecies. Yeah. Don't be a futurist. No.
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch. You're going to go into a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I think that's where I leave you then. I think I leave you now going into the rabbit hole of the Simpsons and we shall discuss next episode.
All right. That sounds good. I guess we'll see you next week.
I'll see you next week. And I guess we don't really know what next week holds for us. We may have a special guest. We may not. And I think that's nice to keep us on our toes as well as our listeners.
Mm-hmm. Yep. See you next week.
Mm-hmm. All right. See you next week.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Allow your imagination to be piqued by stories that are brought to life through captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. As an Audible member, you'll be able to keep your heart rate up month after month because you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. If you're in the mood for a shocking psychological thriller, check out None of This Is True by Lisa Jewell. Embrace brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.